Chapter 15. I fancy we have had enough of Jerusalem, she said, considering we are not descended from the Jews. There was nothing first-rate about the place, or people, after all, as there was about Athens, Rome, Alexandria, and other old cities. But my dear girl, consider what it is to us. She was silent, for she was easily repressed, and then perceived behind the group of children clustered round the model a young man in a white flannel jacket, his form being bent so low in his intent inspection of the valley of Jehoshaphat that his face was almost hidden from view by the Mount of Olives. Look at your cousin Jude, continued the schoolmaster. He doesn't think we have had enough of Jerusalem. Ah, I didn't see him, she cried in her quick, light voice. Jude, how seriously you are going into it. Jude started up from his reverie and saw her. H. Sue, he said, with a glad flush of embarrassment. These are your school children, of course. I saw that schools were admitted in the afternoons and thought you might come, but I got so deeply interested that I didn't remember where I was. How it carries one back, doesn't it? I could examine it for hours, but I have only a few minutes, unfortunately, for I am in the middle of a job out here. Your cousin is so terribly clever that she criticizes it unmercifully, said Phillotson, with good-humored satire. He is quite skeptical as to its correctness. No, Mr. Phillotson, I am not altogether. I hate to be what is called a clever girl. There are too many of that sort now, answered Sue sensitively. Only meant I don't know what I meant, except that it was what you don't understand. I know your meaning, said Jude ardently, although he did not, and I think you are quite right. That's a good Jude. I know you believe in me. She impulsively seized his hand, and leaving a reproachful look on the schoolmaster, turned away to Jude, her voice revealing a tremor which she herself felt to be absurdly uncalled for by sarcasm so gentle. As he had not the least conception how the hearts of the twain went out to her at this momentary revelation of feeling, and what a complication she was building up thereby in the futures of both. The model wore too much of an educational aspect for the children not to tire of it soon, and a little later in the afternoon they were all marched back to Lumsden, Jude returning to his work. He watched the juvenile flock in their clean frocks and pinafores, filing down the street towards the country beside Phillotson and Sue, and a sad, dissatisfied sense of being out of the scheme of the latter's lives had possession of him. Phillotson had invited him to walk out and see them on Friday evening, when there would be no lessons to give to Sue, and Jude had eagerly promised to avail himself of the opportunity. Meanwhile, the scholars and teachers moved homewards, and the next day, on looking on the blackboard in Sue's class, Phillotson was surprised to find upon it, skillfully drawn in chalk, a perspective view of Jerusalem, with every building shown in its place. I thought you took no interest in the model and hardly looked at it, he said. I hardly did, said she, but I remembered that much of it. It is more than I had remembered myself. Her Majesty's school inspector was at that time paying her prize visits in this neighborhood to test the teaching unawares, and 2 days later, in the middle of the morning lessons, the latch of the door was softly lifted, and in walked my gentleman, the king of terrors to pupil teachers. To Mr. Phillotson the surprise was not great. Like the lady in the story, he had been played that trick too many times to be unprepared. But Sue's class was at the further end of the room, and her back was towards the entrance. The inspector therefore came and stood behind her, and watched her teaching some half minute before she became aware of his presence. She turned, and realized that an oft-dreaded moment had come. The effect upon her timidity was such that she uttered a cry of fright. Phillotson, with a strange instinct of solicitude quite beyond his control, was at her side just in time to prevent her falling from faintness. She soon recovered herself, and laughed, But when the inspector had gone, there was a reaction, and she was so white that Phillotson took her into his room and gave her some brandy to bring her round. She found him holding her hand. "You ought to have told me," she gasped petulantly, "that one of the inspector's surprise visits was imminent. Oh, what shall I do? Now he'll write and tell the managers that I am no good, and I shall be disgraced forever." "He won't do that, my dear little girl. You are the best teacher ever I had." He looked so gently at her that she was moved, and regretted that she had upbraided him. When she was better, she went home. Jude, in the meantime, had been waiting impatiently for Friday. On both Wednesday and Thursday, he had been so much under the influence of his desire to see her that he walked after dark some distance along the road in the direction of the village, and, on returning to his room to read, found himself quite unable to concentrate his mind on the page. On Friday, as soon as he had got himself up as he thought Sue would like to see him, and made a hasty tea, he set out, notwithstanding that the evening was wet. The trees overhead deepened the gloom of the hour, and they dripped sadly upon him, impressing him with forebodings, illogical forebodings. For though he knew that he loved her, he also knew that he could not be more to her than he was. On turning the corner and entering the village, the first sight that greeted his eyes was that of two figures under one umbrella coming out of the vicarage gate. He was too far back for them to notice him, but he knew in a moment that they were Sue and Phillotson. The latter was holding the umbrella over her head, and they had evidently been paying a visit to the vicar, probably on some business connected with the school work. And as they walked along the wet and deserted lane, Jude saw Phillotson place his arm round the girl's waist, whereupon she gently removed it, but he replaced it, and she let it remain, looking quickly round her with an air of misgiving. She did not look absolutely behind her, and therefore did not see Jude, who sank into the hedge like one struck with a blight. There he remained hidden till they had reached Sue's cottage, and as he had passed in, Phillotson going on to the school hard by. "Oh, he's too old for her, too old," cried Jude in all the terrible sickness of hopeless, handicapped love. He could not interfere. Was he not Arabella's? He was unable to go on further, and retraced his steps towards Christminster. Every tread of his feet seemed to say to him that he must on no account stand in the schoolmaster's way with Sue. Phillotson was perhaps 20 years her senior, but many a happy marriage had been made in such conditions of age. The ironical clinch to his sorrow was given by the thought that the intimacy between his cousin and the schoolmaster had been brought about entirely by himself. Why, Jude's old and embittered aunt lay unwell at Marygreen, and on the following Sunday he went to see her, a visit which was the result of a victorious struggle against his inclination to turn aside to the village of Lumsden and obtain a miserable interview with his cousin, in which the word nearest his heart could not be spoken, and the sight which had tortured him could not be revealed. His aunt was now unable to leave her bed, and a great part of Jude's short day was occupied in making arrangements for her comfort. The little bakery business had been sold to a neighbor, and with the proceeds of this, and her savings, she was comfortably supplied with necessaries and more, a widow of the same village living with her, and ministering to her wants. It was not till the time had nearly come for him to leave that he obtained a quiet talk with her, and his words tended insensibly towards his cousin. Was Sue born here? She was in this room. They were living here at that time. What made he ask that? Oh, I wanted to know. Now you've been seeing her, said the harsh old woman. And what did I tell ye? Well, that I was not to see her. Have you gossiped with her? Yes. Then don't keep it up. She was brought up by her father to hate her mother's family, and she'll look with no favor upon a working chap like you, a townish girl as she's become by now. I never cared much about her. A pert little thing, that's what she was too often, with her tight-strained nerves. Many's the time I've smacked her for her impertinence. Why, one day when she was walking into the pond with her shoes and stockings off, and her petticoats pulled above her knees, afore I could cry out for shame, she said, "Move on, auntie. This is no sight for modest eyes." Apostrophe, she was a little child then. She was 12 if a day. Well, of course. But now she's older, she's of a thoughtful, quivering, tender nature, and as sensitive as Jude, cried his aunt, springing up in bed. Aunt, you be a fool about her. No, no, of course not. Your marrying that woman Arabella was about as bad a thing as a man could possibly do for himself by trying hard. But she's gone to the other side of the world, and med never trouble you again. And there'll be a worse thing if you, tied and bound as you be, should have a fancy for Sue. If your cousin is civil to you, take her civility for what it is worth. But anything more than a relation's good wishes, it is stark madness for ye to give her. If she's townish and wanton, it med bring ye to ruin. Don't say anything against her, and don't, please. A relief was afforded to him by the entry of the companion and nurse of his aunt, who must have been listening to the conversation, for she began a commentary on past years, introducing Sue Brighthead as a character in her recollections. She described what an odd little maid Sue had been when a pupil at the village school across the green opposite, before her father went to London, how, when the vicar arranged readings and recitations, she appeared on the platform, the smallest of them all, in her little white frock, and shoes, and pink sash. How she recited, "Celsior, there was a sound of revelry by night, and, he raven." How during the delivery she would knit her little brows and glare round tragically, and say to the empty air, as if some real creature stood there, ghastly, grim, and ancient raven, wandering from the nightly shore, "Tell me what thy lordly name is on the night's Plutonian shore." She'd bring up the nasty carrion bird that clear, corroborated the sick woman reluctantly, as she stood there in her little sash and things, that you could see unamused before your very eyes. You too, Jude, had the same trick as a child of seeming, to see things in the air. The neighbor told also of Sue's accomplishments in other kinds. She was not exactly a tomboy, you know, but she could do things that only boys do, as a rule. I've seen her hit in and steer down the long slide on yonder pond, with her little curls blowing, one of a file of 20 moving along against the sky like shapes painted on glass, and up the backslide without stopping. All boys except herself. And then they'd cheer her, and then she'd say, "Don't be saucy, boys," apostrophe, and suddenly run indoors. They'd try to coax her out again, but it wouldn't come. These retrospective visions of Sue only made Jude the more miserable, that he was unable to woo her, and he left the cottage of his aunt that day with a heavy heart. He would fain have glanced into the school, to see the room in which Sue's little figure had so glorified itself, but he checked his desire and went on. It being Sunday evening, some villagers who had known him during his residence here were standing in a group in their best clothes. Jude was startled by a salute from one of them. "Ye have got there right enough, then." Jude showed that he did not understand. "Why, to the seat of learning, the city of light you used to talk to us about as a little boy. Is it all you expected of it?" "Yes, more," cried Jude. "When I was there once for an hour, I didn't see much in it for my part. All crumbling buildings, half church, half almshouse, and not much going on at that." "You are wrong, John. There is more going on than meets the eye of a man walking through the streets. It is a unique center of thought and religion, the intellectual and spiritual granary of this country. All that silence and absence of goings on is the stillness of infinite motion, the sleep of the spinning top, to borrow the simile of a well-known writer. Oh, well, it med be all that, or it med not. As I say, I didn't see nothing of it the hour or two I was there, so I went in, and had a pot o' beer, and a penny loaf, and a haporth o' cheese, and waited till it was time to come along home. You've ginned a college by this time, I suppose?" "Ah, no," said Jude. "I'm almost as far off that as ever." "How so?" Jude slapped his pocket. "Just what we thought. Such places be not for such as you, only for them with plenty of money. There you are wrong, said Jude, with some bitterness. They are for such ones. Still, the remark was sufficient to withdraw Jude's attention from the imaginative world he had lately inhabited, in which an Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.